Grab your favorite caffeinated beverage and get cozy because you are listening to Mindful as a Mother with Paige Bruce and Lindsay Adams.
It is so hard to find social and emotional learning toys that will actually be engaging and fun for your child. And that's why we are so excited that we are partnering with Slumberkins.
In our home, we're really struggling right now with the idea that I'm the worst kid ever. I'm a horrible sister anytime we make a mistake. And so we recently brought in the Yak, which is all about self-acceptance for kids. And it's made such a difference. When we're struggling, we can remember that our brain is lying to us and say Yak's affirmation, I am loved as I am. When things get tough, I go back to my heart. I know I am enough.
Oh, I love this. It's hard for me to find toys that are in or stuffies that are engaging for my kids. And normally I take them to my office, but with the Slumberkins, I haven't even been able to get them to my office because my kids are so obsessed. So if you want to try Slumberkins, you can go to their website. We'll also put it in the show notes and use the code MINDFULASAMOTHER for 15% off at checkout.
Do you remember those toys from when we were kids where you would fit the different shaped pegs into the different shaped holes?
Yeah.
That's a lot like parenting, except when you have a neurodivergent child, using traditional parenting techniques is like trying to put the round peg in the star hole.
That's exactly how I felt when I discovered that Sam was neurodivergent. I knew that traditional parenting techniques and even the approaches that I was taught in grad school, they didn't feel right in my soul to like supporting who he was as a human. And they also just weren't effective. And that's when I discovered the power of responsive parenting.
Exactly. So if you are like us and are interested in tailoring responsive parenting techniques to your neurodivergent world, check out our Parenting Your NeuroSpicy video series. You can find it in our Sandstore at the link in the show notes.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for therapy or the therapeutic relationship. And the information given in this podcast is purely for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the advice of a professional.
Hello and welcome back to Mindful as a Mother. My name is Lindsay and I'm here with
Paige.
Ooh, and we are on podcast weekend and we're here to talk about adulting with ADHD.
Yeah, and I just want to take special note that this psychologist used the word adulting as a professional psychology term, so millennials.
That's real. Where we're at. Millennials.
Also, can you believe we're almost done with this season?
No.
Season 3 is almost over, guys. We're almost completely through this book. And some of the comments we've been getting have made my entire life. Yeah. You sent me one today. Can we read that?
Yeah, I would love to.
Okay.
Okay. So I posted, I feel like this needs context. I posted a thing about how you should unfollow any parenting account that makes you feel shame.
And did you put that in our Facebook group or your Facebook page?
It's everywhere.
Oh, it is everywhere.
And someone commented, this is literally the gentlest mom/parent group I've ever been in. I still love the sentiment that if you need to unfollow, do what's best for you. But this group is so helpful and I never feel shamed.
Yeah. I just want to let that sit because I talk about this throughout the season, but a lot of times Lindsay and I are just talking at each other for multiple hours a day. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to connect that you guys are on the other end and this is helpful.
Are you crying?
No, I'm sick.
Oh, okay. I was like, wow.
I'm so passionate. No, I am though. I am passionate about this because we do get feedback that people listen to the podcast. People are here listening. It is helpful to hear us break down this book. It's helpful to kind of break down in an easily understood way how you can experience ADHD, how your children can experience ADHD, and skills that you can use.
Yeah, and to be honest, sometimes I cry when I read like the messages and the comments about how we've changed how people approach their parenting and their relationship with their kids. And I feel like because a majority of it is on social media, it is hard to take in maybe the impact. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody sends you like a cry-worthy thank you message. But when they do, you're like.
Yeah. And I even have clients that I work with personally when we are experiencing something that is in relation to their symptoms of ADHD, and I know that this podcast is a resource they can listen to, I'll refer them to. It's like, listen to this specific episode because this breaks it down really beautifully and I think it'll resonate with you. Mm-hmm. And they have such positive feedback about that. Like, most often the people feel seen in a way they haven't felt seen before, and that our authenticity and willingness to admit our faults and our mistakes and our learning opportunities makes an impact. So sometimes I visualize people. I'm like, oh, how many likes did we get on this, or how many comments have we gotten, or how many reviews do we have, right? I visualize that many people sitting in a room listening to us talk.
I love this.
So this next chapter, very close to almost done, we're going to talk about adulting, which is hacking your life, or I love the title of the chapter. It's called Dancing Through Life. So instead of struggling and trying to mask and make the world work, make ourselves work in the world's way, we're going to adult and hack so we can make the world work for us.
And this is, think of this like an experiment, because every person is going to be different. So when I'm giving you examples, or Paige is giving you examples of how we dance through the day, that is not how it's going to look for you, even if you have ADHD, or because everybody's different. So think of it as an experiment. Try something, see how you feel. If it doesn't work, adjust it.
Trial and error.
Yeah.
Especially in parenting and parenting neurodivergence and reparenting yourself, trial and error. Always.
So visualizing is one of the things she talks about a lot in this chapter. And I love the exercise that she gives. And I've started doing this since I read the chapter, which was like yesterday, to be honest with you. because, you know, when you have ADHD, it's right now or not right now. And so I knew we were coming to record this episode, so it was right now. But she visualizes, she wakes up in the morning, visualizes how her morning goes up until noon, and visualizes each step of the day and the flow of it. Then visualizes around noon her like afternoon chunk of time, and then around five her evening chunk of time.
Yeah.
And I did that, and then I broke it down a little more, and I decided like I'm gonna do like each block of tasks. So, like, say I'm at home in the morning with the kids, I'm going to visualize that, and then, like, my work, and then, like, just break it up how it needs to be broken up for you. But it helps you flow through your day and see how your day is going to go, because a lot of times we make up these thoughts or stories about how things are going to go or how hard tasks are going to be, and those are actually the thing that makes them hard.
Yeah. It's how we predict they're going to be.
And auto-rehearsal is something that neurodivergent people do naturally, because we, a lot of times, we want to make sure we don't forget things. We map out conversations and how we think they're going to go because of all the different ways that our brain works. It's a way that we naturally kind of like hack life. But I like taking this a step further because it's doing it in a positive way. So rather than auto rehearsing everything that could go wrong with your day, which is where I was at before, so I could plan for it, prepare for it, just auto rehearsing how I feel and it going well.
Yeah.
And I felt so much less frazzled and present even when things come up or don't go my way or how I had planned.
Yeah, how you had visualized.
Yeah.
In the book, she has a metaphor. So this whole podcast today is going to be on hacks, okay? Adulting hacks. So one of them is rehearsing. In the book, she talks about the Blue Angels.
Yeah.
And which is the Jets that do the performances and things. And I'm sure they have other jobs that aren't just performing for us, but that's civilian life for me. Mm-hmm. But how they meet early and they go through the entire routine mentally as a group, visualizing it before they actually get into their jets. And I thought this was so interesting because as a neurodivergent person, I have also auto rehearsed, but I have a tendency to rehearse areas of interest or things I need practice too. So when I was younger, I would rehearse. Okay. Nerd alert. I was in the marching band.
Okay.
I was the captain of the drumline, which takes a little bit of the nerding out, but still very nerdy.
Oh my God. I suddenly want to watch Drumline.
That's me.
I haven't seen that movie in forever. So when, well, we're getting real millennial in
that's
here.
That's right.
Adulting and Drumline.
So I used to rehearse in my head the songs, right? But they're just patterns of beats that I would have to play. I would rehearse it in my head, and I would rehearse the steps for the marching band show, because you have to make different formations with the groups mentally. And I used to do the same thing because I play the piano. So when I was trying to memorize a song, or I had a concert coming up for the piano, I would visualize it in my head and practice playing.
So cool. I took a sports psychology class in my undergrad because my bachelor's is in exercise science.
Yeah. She's a fit queen.
It's a whole thing. There was a life shift. But I think sports psychology is so cool, and I would love to be like a psychologist for a pro team in another life. But that is what the professor trains Olympic athletes and works with Olympic athletes. And that's what she does, is she has them visualize things, or if they have mental blocks, she has them visualize it going well, or how they want things to work out, or even like the technicalities or the techniques of their sport. Like she worked with the U.S. speed skating team, like this is going to age me, back when like Apollo Anton Ono was on there. Millennials up in here.
Elder millennial.
So she talked about how she did that and like what different things. And it was so cool to me.
Yeah. Yes. So this too isn't just a skill for people with ADHD. This can be anybody that's neurodivergent. Also, if you have anxiety, because I specialize in anxiety, and this is something that I teach a lot of my clients, especially children, and I get a lot of like, Miss Paige, and like eye rolling for it. But I say this all the time, and I will die on this hill: what you perceive, you receive. So the stories that you are visualizing in your mind is what's going to happen. That is what you are more likely to receive or interpret situations as. So if you have a lot of anxiety, or you're feeling anxious about something, you visualize the scenario and you visualize it going in your favor or the way you want it to go, to help neutralize your brain's response, to calm down your cortex.
Well, and it's science. So we have what's called a reticular activating system. And because our brain is taking in like an insane amount of information at any moment in time. And so its job is to filter out what's important and what's not important. So when we're thinking about all the things that could go wrong, we are training our brain to look for those things.
Yep.
And so you can actually train your brain to look for good things or the positive things.
Yes.
Science. Okay, what's the next tip?
I feel like Miss Frizzle. Anyway,
I have content for Miss Frizzle coming soon. I think it's posting tomorrow because I scheduled it.
Okay, Miss Frizzle. So that's one of the skills, rehearsing. If you haven't tried it, give it a good old hearty attempt. Because it's going to make an impact.
Yeah. Do it.
The second hack involves sleep. And she says that there's three very common fallacies or fake ideas about sleep. Lies that we tell ourselves about sleep as neurodivergent people. And it's one, I don't need a lot of sleep. Mm-hmm. Two, sleep is a waste of time. Mm-hmm. Or sleep isn't important. Mm-hmm. Or it's too, actually not important, but it's too hard to get sleep.
Mm-hmm. So why even try?
Yeah. So like, what's the point? It's too hard. I can't do it anyways. So she actually breaks down how science has identified that there is a brain cleaning function that happens when our brain is at rest. So when we're asleep, there's a whole waste clearance system in our body that has a fancy name. I'm not a scientist. So here we go. Glymphatic system.
Sounds right.
Mm-hmm. And essentially, it is like the rinse cycle for the dishwasher, but on your brain. It takes clear liquid found in your brain and spine and like rinses your brain out from built-up stress and cortisol.
Love it.
Did you know that before this book?
I had like heard that, but not on this level.
Isn't that interesting? I was like, that's so cool. So basically, fluid flows more freely through the brain when it rests at nighttime. So it washes away a protein called a beta amyloid. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't occur. When that process doesn't occur, they found that that can build up and it leads to like
Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. characteristics of Alzheimer's, cognitive decline, chronic illness. Mm-hmm. I was like, stop. Everyone needs me to take naps and get more sleep at night.
Obviously.
7 to 9 hours. If you don't get 7 to 9 hours, your beta something protein is off the charts.
And the thing I found interesting about this is she breaks down some science about like how ADHD brains sleep differently, like the sleep cycle being a little bit backwards.
Yeah.
So, and she references one study in there about the sleep cycle being flipped. So most people, neurotypical people, fall asleep and you have your lightest sleep when you, your deepest sleep when you first fall asleep, and then your lightest sleep closest to waking up, like your REM sleep, right? And that's usually when you're in your dream state. People with ADHD typically have their deepest sleep at like 5 a.m, which is what makes it so hard to wake up with ADHD. Uh-huh. And why there's like the sleep inertia piece.
Yeah.
A little bit. Uh-huh. Extended sleep inertia, which is really just morning grogginess. Like it takes people with ADHD typically like an hour and a half to fully wake up. Whereas like a neurotypical brain, like a half hour to 45 minutes. So, and that's just like your brainwave going through the cycles because you move through like theta to then beta, which is like your baseline going throughout the day. The other thing is people with ADHD tend to have delayed onset of melatonin, yes, meaning that like around 9 p.m., there's this uptick in energy. I'm not tired. Mm-hmm. Making it harder to fall asleep. So it feels like there's kind of all these things working against us to get a good night's sleep. But she does give some tips for how to get enough sleep and how to get good sleep.
Yeah. I think one of those tips is she talks about how there's a 45-minute window before you go to sleep that is signaling sleep to your body.
Yeah.
So intentionally changing your environment about 45 minutes before you need to go to sleep can help signal to your body that it's bedtime and melatonin production.
Do you want me to tell you what my bedtime routine is?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So I get the kids to sleep. Tim and I usually watch a show. If I'm following my own boundaries, we watch like one episode at around like 9:15, I go upstairs. If I'm not, then everything goes out the window because it's all or nothing. I go up. I replace. Kate, you guys are. I'm not even going to preface this. I'm not even going to preface this. I'm just going to tell you what I do. So I replace the light bulbs in our bedside lamps with red lights because they're calming to your nervous system. You can buy chicken coop red lights on Amazon. They're very cheap.
You have a chicken coop bed.
And I hate birds. And I hate birds.
Yeah, you do. You're terrified.
I turn the red lights on. I turn all the overhead lights off. Then I usually run a bath. While my bath is running, I set my clothes out for the next day.
Nice.
And then I do some kind of meditation in the bath. Then I need to have magnesium and lavender on my feet. Two fans on. One is a cooler and one is like a fan.
Mm-hmm.
A very dark room. Eye mask. And I've recently been taping my mouth. I told a page about this before I nap. And because I listened to another podcast, it's the Rebel White Coat, right? Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she talks about mouth taping, how because we, okay, there's a whole reasoning behind it. I'm not going to get into it. That would take up the whole podcast, but we breathe through our mouths and we shouldn't. And especially when we're asleep. So pretty much we're not getting deep restful sleep where our brain can get cleaned by that fluid. That's where I'd heard about it before.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're constantly in a lighter state of sleep because we're choking on our own tongue all night because our tongues aren't strong enough. It's a whole thing. I tape my mouth and it's done amazing things for me. I've never slept so good in my entire life.
That's wild.
Also, just to preface this, I also take a sleeping pill, but I've always taken it. So like since I've done these things, my sleep has improved in amazing ways.
And we are not medical professionals in the sense that we can tell you the consequence of taping your mouth shut. So do it at your own risk.
No, oh, yeah. Here's Paige like this.
I was like, we are medical professionals, but we're not medical professionals.
Like, no, this is not medical advice. So don't tape your mouth shut. But maybe go listen to that podcast. Do a quick Google. Make your own choices. Try it out. And to be honest, I told Paige this. I, like, never wake up with the tape still on my mouth. Literally, Tim thinks it's funny. He makes all kinds of jokes about wanting to tape my mouth shut. Ha, ha, ha. But I always wake up with like the tape stuck to my shirt, which means I probably just like rip it off in the middle of the night. But still, so I don't even know how long it's staying on.
Yeah.
But it's enough that I notice a visible difference in how I feel in the morning.
Okay. Great.
So that's
your sleep. And again, we're your friends, not your mama. So do your research.
Do your research. Do your Google. Don't sue me. Also, 45 minutes. Like, it takes about 45 minutes.
I'm in bed. And you have built in those associations, I think, which is what's powerful, is like that is what's signaling to your brain that it's time for bed.
Yeah.
That right there. And I, like the other day too, on our social media, you had posted a thing and then you just put words about, like, there's a remote in your child's bedroom and like screen time, blah, blah, blah. But you were like, everyone needs different levels of stimulation. And so she really emphasizes practicing a routine that works well for you. Like, do you need a cold room? Do you need a hot room? Do you need a heavy blanket? Do you need a light blanket? Do you need tape on your mouth? Do you need to be a mouth breather? Like, I don't know, science. But she emphasizes trial and error in attempting the different things to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep, and that there are things you can do. So if you're falling into this, it's too hard to fall asleep, I can't sleep, then chances are there are hacks that you can apply to make sure you're getting enough sleep. Because research has also shown that when you don't get enough sleep, you have an increase of ADHD symptoms. It's wild in children. It can be life-changing.
Also, and especially with Sam, like, so I think when I like went on that little rant, it was a little bit of like, we just follow traditional parenting advice blindly. Like, kids shouldn't watch TV to fall asleep. Yeah. Well, I agree with that. I also think that so many parents are missing out on a tool. And I'm not saying you let them watch shows and stay up all night, but like, we watched the Calm show on, it's on Max, and it's like a meditation show. It just shows like nature pictures, and it distracts Sam's brain enough that he can fall asleep.
Yeah. Yes. Well, she even talks about some people need it to be totally quiet. Some people need the radio on. I either have a podcast playing or white noise, like if my Alexa's in my room, or I have
Forensic
the
TV files
on in the background. No, I try not to, because sometimes I wake up with an anxiety response to true crime podcasts while I sleep. But
I used to sleep with Forensic Files on, and I would have dreams about murder. And then I thought, this is probably not good for my subconscious.
Yeah, so my nervous system was responding.
So, yeah.
But it's, and what I do is typically I will play a show that I've seen before. So then it's comforting to my nervous system, like a sense of safety and familiarity. And then the noise is distracting, so my mind doesn't ping pong.
Yeah, yeah. And Tim does the same thing. So it's always like fishing. We call it fishing in our house. Sam will watch fishing with him too. And it's River Monsters. Mm-hmm. And also Jeremy Wade, the host of River Monsters, has like a very soothing voice.
Yeah.
Any nature show, those are great because the voice is super soothing. It calms your nervous system. And it's stuff that's like interesting enough, but not super interesting.
Yeah. And it's like, I can't tell you how many times I've rewatched Charmed from beginning to end and like fallen asleep to it, or had it on as background noise to help me focus. Again, because neurodivergence is different for everybody. So for me, I focus best when there's a level of distraction happening. If I want to do those boring yellow tasks or things that really need my focus, I have like a show or a podcast playing in the background, uh-huh, and it helps me focus.
And this is why it's so important to adapt your environment to you, not based on typical, like, obviously talk to your professionals, but like typical advice that's, mm-hmm, out there. Because I think we really like, so if you're laying in bed as a neurodivergent human, or putting your child in bed, like in a dark room with no distraction, and they're awake for hours, like maybe we need to explore some other options.
Yeah. And then they're still not getting any sleep. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I have one child like that, and I really think it's a little bit of demand avoidance. Like, as much as her body needs sleep, directing her to go to sleep or to meet that need, uh-huh, is a demand.
Yeah.
And so it's being avoided even though she desperately needs it. So then it's like, there's a bunch of studies going around right now about how if you give your kids melatonin, you're going to disrupt their hormone production in puberty. Like, I'm sure it's, if you actually read the study and statistics, I'm sure they're like traditional regular use prescribed by your pediatrician. That's not the case. But again, it's on social media, right? Like, don't blindly follow things you hear or read on the internet.
Yeah, or talk to your doctor.
Even from us. We're your friends, not your mama.
Don't tape your mouth unless you Google it.
And so anyway, so I'm like, well, yeah, I do actually give her melatonin because I know that she has a propensity to view that as a demand, and then it lights up her nervous system and she fights it, and then she's overtired and we're in this like super vicious cycle.
That's what the pediatrician recommends for Sam. We don't do it every night, mm-hmm. but we definitely, in times when we're like, I know he's going to be extra tired, yes. or it's we're past the point, it is a useful tool in our family.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And we don't do it consistently either, but for those times. And I'm hoping as she continues to grow and we continue to build in these hacks, right, it'll get easier, but mm-hmm. but right now I think about every third day, if she doesn't nap, we have until like day three when she's just so overtired that everything is, it's just a whole mess, mm-hmm. everything is, because she's refusing sleep, mm-hmm. so we're getting there, but it used to be like a daily occurrence, mm-hmm. like so rough. The number of things we had to do when she was an infant to get her to go to sleep was wild. So, a good night's rest can make a difference, especially with the next hack, which is optimizing your energy throughout the day, because it presents differently in neurodivergent people. And I know this is the ship for Lindsay, so I'm going to let her take over.
Oh, yeah. Like, and I know we've talked about this on the podcast before, but we have a time where our brain feels most alert and awake, and that is when you want to do your yellow tasks. Your yellow are, like, boring but necessary tasks. And this is, like, my notes, paying my bills, like scheduling content. Like the other day, I scheduled 2 weeks worth of content in advance, which is like
unheard of
miracle from
unheard ask of. Page. I've been trying to get you to do that for like what, 2 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is where I was when we met. And then I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to dink around for a while. And now you're here and now I'm not. And I'm like, oh my God.
Sorry, I corrupted you. But I know that between 10 and 1 is like my peak time.
Yeah, that's great for you.
After 1, I need a sensory cocoon of some sort or sunshine, preferably both if it fits in my schedule. And then the afternoon, evening, I do better with tasks that are naturally easy for me. So this is actually like client sessions. So in like the mornings, I've been doing like the admin work, content creation, like paperwork, billing, returning phone calls and emails, stuff I'm not my favorite. But then, and I take my little break, and then in the afternoon, I'm like able to be present for client sessions.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone has different peaks and windows. And Lindsay and I talk about this all the time. And as a woman, it'll shift with your menstrual cycle, which is a whole other, go back and listen to Olivia's episode. But for me, I consider myself, quote unquote, a morning person because my most productive hours are in the morning.
It's yeah, not I don't necessarily understand
like, yeah, it's not necessarily an afternoon window, but there's a natural circadian dip between 1 and 3 p.m. regardless. And that's when I need a sensory cocoon or take like a little power nap.
Siesta. That's why they take siestas, guys.
Culturally, we're not doing things right. We're just not.
No.
Take a nap. It's okay.
Yeah.
But like I can have a 7:30 session and be alert and awake and I'm on it. Like peak for me is probably like 7:30, 8 o'clock to like 11 a.m.
No, absolutely not.
Anything after, I end my sessions by 3 p.m. because I'm useless after that.
Well, America's really messing it up. Well, I mean, in a lot of ways. But this way specifically where we are like conditioned that the 40-hour work week 9 to 5, which is based on, first of all, a neurotypical brain. Second of all, a male hormone system.
Yep.
So men's testosterone resets every day,
yeah.
whereas our hormones fluctuate throughout a 28-day cycle. So absolutely, in the first part of my cycle, am I more productive and on it, and I could schedule 2 weeks of content in 2 weeks. That's not going to be me. I'm going to be like laying on my couch and barely functioning and in a hermit mode. And so a lot of it too is about hacking my life to support myself. And Paige has been trying to get me to do this for years. so that like when that phase rolls around, I've already got the stuff created and ready to go. So then it's not pushing myself through that. So I can actually deeply rest when my body is telling me to rest.
Yes. And then you're meeting yourself where you're at, which is what our nervous system needs to be able to regulate and continue to move forward in a healed way. You can force yourself forward when you're dysregulated, but it's only going to fuck you up.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's going to damage your body.
Mm-hmm.
So my afternoons, like I, my yellow tasks are best accomplished in the morning. And then I do client sessions. And then 3 p.m. on, it's all green tasks for me. Go back and listen to the grades. 3:30-ish and on, it's all green tasks for me.
Yeah. I would say I'm more of a green because I really enjoy, like, my client sessions. Like, I can do that. But, one, most days I'm off by, like, 5. But also as far as, like, housework goes, because housework is, like, a yellow for me, I've noticed that I... And I've put routines in place. You'd be so proud of me. Like
flows. I am so proud. Would be. I am so proud of you.
Flows in place and like for my house so that I'm not having to do the bulk of these tasks like at nighttime and feeling like I'm having to force myself to do them. Because I'm just like finally accepting like.
For the ones that you don't like.
After work, I'm like never going to. The only thing I can find energy for is to load a dishwasher and to fold laundry.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's ever going to happen. If I tell myself something is going to happen after work, I am lying to myself.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to feel shame about the fact that I didn't
shame
do it.
Shame and guilt. So, yep. And judgment, which we're trying not to do because none of that dysregulates your system too.
So why even do that? Why not just structure my life to meet my needs? And I have the privilege.
Adulting.
And I realize there is a privilege piece here for us where we work for ourselves, create our own schedules, that not everyone has this opportunity to like sensory cocoon and go on a walk or like optimize their task at like the perfect time of day, but do what you can where you can.
Yes. And it's going to make a difference.
Yeah.
Any amount that you can hack your life to meet better your energy levels, it'll make a difference. In the book, she gives examples of people that do have to work like an 8 to 5. And they talk about, they categorize the tasks of their job, the necessary tasks of their job, into the different quadrants, and then the quadrants into those energy level, like the peak energy hours, and different things you can do, like put a sign on your door if you're in an office, or see if you can work a different shift if you're in like the service industry, those types of things.
Well, and when I was working more of like a, when I was working, I worked in a women's shelter when I was getting my master's, and they had 3 shifts available. They had 7 to 3, 3 to 11, and 11 to 7 a.m.
Yeah.
So we kind of all had to switch, but I would like, I really loved that 3 to 11 because I feel like of the times available, that was my best time.
Yeah.
And I was able to like have a slower morning, which was like really like, and could like rest all morning. So you can tweak things. And I think for my life now, I've tweaked it into what works best for me.
Yeah. And I've always taken the early morning shifts on things. Like I had to work a job where you had the option of doing like 4 10s, or you could adjust the hours to 12, 14, 12. And that's what I would do. I would do a 12, 14, and a 12 because that's what worked best for like what I allotted my energy.
Yeah.
So there are ways. There are ways to hack your life. And there is privilege that we have specifically where we've made it work for us. But any way that you can adjust to better be in sync with your nervous system to support you getting sleep and minimizing stress is going to change how you react.
And don't underestimate like what a small improvement can do, right? Yeah. Like, and if you have ADHD and you're listening, you probably like have this all or nothing. I'm going to change my entire life.
Yeah.
And then you get overwhelmed and you throw it out the window. And I did that forever. And so I think just really focusing on picking one thing. So like maybe it's I'm going to do the visualizing. Maybe it's I'm going to focus on my sleep. And if you're going to focus on your sleep, pick one thing you can do to make your sleep a little better. And you'll be amazed, right? So like maybe going to bed at 9 and having wind down time isn't feasible for you, but maybe it's that I'm going to like optimize my sleep and make sure that I like use essential oils or an eye mask or whatever.
Yeah.
One thing.
And the other skill that I give that isn't in this book, but we talk about a lot, is habit stacking. And so the consistency and feeling trapped, demand avoidance, is a really difficult part about neurodivergence. So if you're trying to change one thing, try to stack it with something you already do until it becomes a habit. Mm-hmm. And that's been super helpful in my life when I'm trying to make these small adjustments. Mm-hmm. So an example would be every time I get gas, I throw out all the garbage in my car, right? So now my car stays clean. Every time I get gas, I clean out all the garbage. And so eventually that becomes habitual. Mm-hmm. When it is habitual, then I know I'm ready to move on to something else mm-hmm. to be able to pick and improve on.
Yeah. Okay.
Great. Yay. So the next chapter, which is the semi-last, we're going to, I think, do chapter 13, and then we're going to do a little wrap-up, and then we'll be done with the season.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Catch us next time.
Bye.
Thanks for coming to Mindful as a Mother podcast. If you'd like more of us and Mindful as a Mother, you can find Paige at Instagram at Parenting with Paige and Lindsay at Linz_Adams_LCSW. Find us on TikTok, Instagram, and in our Facebook group, Creating Community and Smashing Parental Stigma, Embracing Mindful Motherhood and Positive Parenting. Thanks so much and see you next time.